Schizoaffective Podcast. My name's Scout, and yeah, thank you so much for having a listen today. If you're new here, thank you very much for stopping by, and I have a fair few previous episodes now just covering different topics and how they relate to people with schizoaffective disorder, but as well other psychotic mental illnesses. So feel free to have a listen to those if you'd like to. Today I'm going to try not to talk for too long because I know that sometimes I can sort of get a little bit off track. Today I'm going to be talking about relationships and friendships and sort of navigating those things as someone with a psychotic mental illness. And there's a lot to say, so I'm going to try and keep on track as best as possible. As usual, I apologize for any background noise. There just always seems to be background noise whenever I'm trying to record. And I know sometimes I can find it really frazzling when there's background noise. So I hope it's not too loud or that the microphone's not picking that up too much. There's lots of birds around again. So I'll just jump straight into it. So as I said, talking about relationships and friendships, romantic relationships as well as just platonic friendships. And I suppose I'll just talk about my personal experiences and the things that I've found the hardest when it comes to that and sort of navigating that, especially when, you know, initially I didn't actually have a diagnosis. So before I was diagnosed with bipolar, which was around 10 years ago now. So I was diagnosed about a decade ago with bipolar, but before that, so when I was in my late teens, I honestly just had no idea why I was struggling so much with relationships, and not just romantic relationships, but just friendships as well. And, you know, I'd really struggle to trust people, and I would really struggle to, I suppose, let people in. And I know that that's a human experience to a degree, so you definitely don't have to have a mental illness to have trust issues, obviously. You know, I think a lot of our life experiences cause trust issues as well, so it can certainly be multifaceted. I was bullied quite badly in primary school, and I know that that shaped a lot of my experiences, you know, growing up and later in life, and even today it still affects me in some ways, and obviously that's an ongoing process to work through those things. But yeah, all I mean is I realize there's lots of different, you know, facets to it, but it seemed that I was struggling a bit more than my friends, I suppose, and that's something I noticed in school as well. I remember around that time, 15 or 16, sort of thinking, why are my friends seemingly doing these certain things with such ease, and it seems to be really difficult for me. And I just really internalized that and felt guilt and felt like there was something I was doing wrong. And of course, back then I had very little understanding of mental illness other than, you know, I knew my uncle had schizophrenia, and there was a bit of awareness around that. But other than that, you know, I really didn't know much, and it wasn't something that I ever felt, I really didn't feel like there were many resources at that time. And it's only really been in the last even 5 or 10 years at the very most that I've felt like it's been a lot easier on people, especially younger people. You know, I feel like they've brought out a lot more mental illness awareness and education, which is very good. Certain charities, for example, there's an organization here called Headspace. I don't think it's a international sort of charity, but I know it's an Australian charity, and you know, they started getting a lot of media attention and things like that, and we started having annual days for mental illness awareness, you know, which is really good. And those sorts of things, at least from, you know, my perspective, only really Yeah, it's only really been about the five or ten years at most that those things have become far more mainstream in a very positive way. All I mean is that I was experiencing those things and I didn't really have a name for it. And then, of course, like I said, in my early 20s, I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And then that later became schizoaffective disorder. Later in my 20s, when I started having more paranoid and delusions and voices and everything like that, which I spoke about in a previous podcast, if anyone hasn't listened and they'd like to know a bit more about that experience and a bit more about my specific symptoms. There's a bit more information there. So from then, sort of in my late teens, as I was saying, I was having these experiences where I really felt like I couldn't trust people, and that would start affecting relationships, especially romantically. I would be, you know, feeling very, I suppose as you do at that age as well, you know, feeling very pressured to find someone. And something else that sort of added a bit of difficulty, I suppose, was at that stage I was just figuring out my sexuality and who I was attracted to, and I was feeling very, very pressured to date guys because I'd grown up in a fairly sheltered, not in an entirely negative way, but like in a fairly sheltered part of town. I grew up in the country initially, which was beautiful, a very beautiful experience. But, you know, there was absolutely no one I knew growing up who was gay. And I knew from a very young age that I was feeling attracted to, to women. And I didn't know how to explain that. I didn't really have words for that. But I won't get too far into that side of things. But I just mean that, coming to terms with who I was attracted to, who I wasn't attracted to sexually, and feeling like I had to date guys and then dating guys and really feeling guilt for not having feelings for people and et cetera, et cetera. It just sort of made me feel very overwhelmed when it came to relationships, and it made me feel like no matter what I did, I just wasn't doing anything right, and that I couldn't just seem to get things right. And now I think I was around 20 or 21, and when I did tell people close to me that I was attracted to women, and I didn't say that I don't think I really gave a label to it, to be honest. I just sort of said, I'm attracted to women. I've dated some guys. I don't know if I am attracted to guys at all, and that took me a while to sort of unpack that. But when I started dating, when I started going on dates and things like that with women, and met some on dating sites and things like that, I would feel a really strong connection and an attraction and everything like that, but then I would just really struggle to trust them. You know, I would be like, well, I mean, this obviously happened when I was dating guys in the past, you know, before I came out, but I would always get to that point where I just didn't feel like I could trust people, and it was really, really frustrating, and it really held me back because I would have, I remember there was this one girl who had been just out of nowhere, you just suddenly really have feelings for someone. And I met her when I was traveling, and I had I had feelings for her that were quite strong, and I remember she invited me to go and visit her. It would have just been me and her, and I really, really liked this girl, and I felt really attracted to her. And I honestly hadn't had that feeling with any guys in the past. You know, I'd really cared about them as people and really had good friendships with guys, but there was just no sexual attraction at all. So to meet a girl who I really felt this connection to, and I also felt attracted to her, and you know, felt like, oh wow, there's this great energy and chemistry, which I'd not experienced before. I was so excited by that. But when it came to it, when she was inviting me, into her life and, yeah, just sort of saying, you know, come and stay with me. I just felt like how can I trust her? How do I know she's not going to harm me? How do I know that it's going to be a safe situation? You know, I think I know her, but do I really know her? And at that time, of course, I didn't really recognize those thoughts as paranoid thoughts. I just sort of thought that I was perhaps being a bit afraid of commitment or, yeah, just trying to avoid certain situations. But it was bizarre because, you know, I knew that I'd wanted to be with her. You know, I really, really liked her. But at the same time, my brain was just throwing all these sort of hypothetical situations at me, or worst case scenarios rather, and sort of saying, you know, if you go and be with her, you don't know, you know, she could stab you in your sleep, she could do this and this. So that's just one example of situations where I've felt frustrated at how I haven't been able to sort of move past those paranoid thoughts. And of course, like I said later, in my 20s, I found out, you know, obviously that relates to schizoaffective disorder, and I was having signs of it back then. But that sort of thing would go on fairly constantly whenever a romantic relationship would, you know, if there would ever be an opportunity. You know, I had gone on dates later on when I was still around my early and mid-20s, gone on dates later on with some really lovely ladies, you know, like really lovely. A lot of them were my type, and I just would hit that wall where I would think it's far easier for me to not feel threatened, to not feel uneasy in their space, if that makes sense. You know, when you go to someone's home, for example, and you feel uneasy because you don't know the person that well. And for me, that's a really big trigger for paranoia, you know, not being in a familiar space. And I think another thing that I have to mention that I think is a big part of it is I would very much so feel like they would be better off without me in their life. And I would also often think, you know, they can do an awful lot better. So I'm almost doing them a favor by sort of not pursuing this and letting them go off and be with someone else instead. And I know a few girls got frustrated at me because they would say, oh, you've led me on. And I felt honestly really horrible about that. I nearly said horrible. I felt really horrible about that because that's honestly never been my intention. It's like this really frustrating paradox where I really want to settle down. And I really do. You know, I love that. I love the idea of just being with someone, just being with one person for life. You know, I really love that, and I'm a monogamous person. And yeah, so that was really frustrating because, you know, I would go on a few dates and it would be nice and I'd feel a connection to them. Not all of them, obviously, because you don't always, you know, fall for everyone who you go on dates with. But, you know, I'd had a couple of, just a couple of girls there that I really did feel a connection to. But again, it often came back to, oh gosh, you know, this really means that I'm going to have to fully trust them. And I don't feel capable of fully trusting them. I don't feel capable of letting my guard down and potentially being physically harmed, because that's obviously a big, you know, that's something that's sort of always in my head, you know, being physically harmed. I have a thing about, you know, I'm convinced that people are going to stab me in my sleep. Yeah, so things like that. And I would always say, look, I'm really, really sorry, but, you know, I don't think that now's the right time for me. I don't think I'm in the right place. And I think that's the truth. I don't think I was in the right place at that time. And I was trying to be in the right place, but obviously mentally I really wasn't. And I had to do a lot of, just self-care, and I had to figure out why I was feeling that way and why I was struggling so much with relationships. And later on, I'm very thankful as well that, you know, a few of those situations, you know, I'm still friends with some of those ladies who I've, you know, we were romantically, I suppose, linked at first and it didn't work out, but, you know, we still get along, and I think that that's a really nice thing when there's no hard feelings, and that's really important. It honestly wasn't until later that I really started recognizing a pattern. It's sort of funny to me that it took so long to recognize a pattern, but I guess that comes with it. You know, I think it was when my psychiatrist said to me, I think it was last year actually, he said to me when I was talking to him about relationships and saying how I was really struggling to trust people. And something happened with, how do I sum this up? Something happened with someone who I really trusted. I won't go into the details, but basically they were physically abusive to someone. It wasn't me. They weren't physically abusive to me, but they were physically abusive to someone. And I was very, very shocked, as you would be, to hear about that, because I considered this person someone who I trusted pretty much with my life, or close enough to it. And to find out that someone who I'd trusted so much had done something like that to someone else, it just absolutely almost confirmed my paranoias about people, because I have pushed so many people away out of fear of being harmed and out of fear of, you know, not really knowing them and feeling like, do I really know them? You know, like, I feel like I know them, but do I actually know them? Because you hear of people who everyone says, oh, they were such a great person, they were so nice and down to earth, and then they do something really violent, or they lash out and they hurt someone who, you know, just some innocent bystander. And yeah, that happened on this occasion, and I was literally shaking with fear just hearing about it, because I'd considered this person very close to me, and it was very difficult because, like I said, physical violence is something that is, I mean, obviously most people are terrified of physical violence, but yeah, it's a delusion I have that people are coming to physically harm me. It's taken me a very long time to recognize it as a delusion and not reality. So when it happens in reality, when it's someone who you trust a lot, it really shakes things up, and it really mentally stresses you out, because it just confirms your concerns. And it says, well, there's proof right there that you shouldn't trust anyone, you know, and that you it's too dangerous to trust people. And I think that sums up a lot of my friendships. So I'm definitely lucky that I have some amazing friends, and I want to make that clear, you know, very, very wonderful people, very intelligent and kind and sweet, and I'm very grateful for my friends. I just feel very thankful that, you know, I know that I'm not always easy either. You know, I know that when I'm in an episode or when I'm experiencing acute stress, I can really be so scatterbrained and my moods can be really difficult and things like that. And, you know, I have friends who are so supportive and constantly checking in and making sure I'm okay and things like that. So I'm really lucky. But, you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel a lot of guilt over just how much I struggle to trust people, including a lot of my good friends, and just how much I feel like people are constantly talking about me behind my back. And that has caused some conflicts in the past. I can't pretend that it hasn't. There's been times where There's been lots of times, if I'm being honest, and I'm really not proud of this, but there's been lots of times where I have been so convinced that some of my closest friends are conspiring against me, or that they're planning to harm me, or that they're just constantly whispering about me behind my back. That's a huge thing that I constantly feel, almost, to be honest, on a daily basis. Even presently, it's something that I unfortunately haven't gotten a complete grip of. And I've had times where I've said to friends, and I'm thankful so many of them have gotten really understanding and are very understanding in general. But I have friends who sometimes I've just said to them out of nowhere, I'm really sorry, but I just need to confirm, like, you don't hate me, do you? You know, have I done something? Do you hate me? Is there, you know, you can tell me if you're talking about me behind my back, just tell me to my face. It's better for me. You know, if there's something I've done that's upsetting you, tell me to my face. And almost always, not always, but almost always, they're always saying, no, gosh, you haven't done anything. No, I'm not angry at you at all. You know, there's no reason for me to be, you know, and they're being very kind. And yeah, that's something that I'll sometimes say, I'm so sorry, but I just need to check in and make sure that you don't despise me, just to get that reassurance that there's so many background noises. It's really sort of distracting me. Sorry. Yeah, just to get that confirmation that I haven't done anything, because I also have a big paranoia that I've sort of done something to upset someone. And again, I know that can be just a human experience on some level. I think the difference is, I'm just going off what my psychiatrist has said as well, the difference is generally around the severity of that. So people with psychotic conditions, especially obviously speaking from the schizoaffective point of view, it's fairly common for you to be experiencing those things, but just at a more severe and intense level. So it's far more disruptive to people's lives. So clinically, that's clinically that's relevant, because, like I said, I know some of these things are a part of just the human experience, the human condition, where we feel worried that we've upset people, feel worried that we've said something that's come out the wrong way. I think a lot of us are worried about being misunderstood, especially when we're living in a time where so much communication is online and where so much tone is lost, and where conversations are just, they can just go from 0 to 100 really quickly when that was not people's intentions. And I'm certainly guilty of that, and I know other people are, and I think it's something we have to be mindful of with the way that we're going in terms of social media. Social media can be amazing, obviously, but I think it has a negative in that communication can break down and be severely misunderstood. And I know that I've misunderstood people in the past, and I've gotten very, very paranoid over misunderstandings. And I know that personally, at least, I've felt misunderstood as well by others. And I felt like, no, you know, that's really not what I was getting at. It's not how I meant that to sort of be expressed, etc. So yeah, in terms of those sort of symptoms, such as feeling mistrust for people, from a clinical standpoint, like my psychiatrist was saying, it tends to be disruptive. I always feel like I pronounce that wrong, that word incorrectly. Disruptive. That's how it's pronounced, right? I think. Disruptive. I'm pretty sure that's how it's pronounced. Sorry if that's wrong. I'm sorry. My brain is just very, very short-circuity today. Just give me a sec. My head's just sort of lots of things going on. And there's someone hammering, and for some reason just having like even one sort of background noise, it just sort of seems to make my brain sort of struggle to focus on what I'm doing. So yeah, what I was saying was the mistrust is a huge symptom. So I would say to anyone who's listening, if perhaps you don't know, you know, if what you're experiencing is relating to your diagnosis, perhaps you don't have a diagnosis at this stage, or maybe you know someone who does have schizoaffective disorder or another type of psychotic mental illness, I think the best question to ask when you asking yourself or whether you're asking someone else is just to inquire as to whether it is disturbing their daily life, you know. So having a passing paranoid thought that isn't disturbing your life isn't necessarily, and of course, by the way, I'm not a medical professional, I'm just talking about my personal experiences, so always, always, always see a medical professional. So yeah, I'm definitely not giving any medical advice here. Just saying that from my personal experience, you know, and from what I've been told by professionals, is that, you know, on a base level, humans can experience paranoia. Humans can experience mistrust of others. And certain life experiences, like I said, can contribute to that significantly. You know, if you've been with someone and they've been unfaithful, it would obviously make sense to have trust issues. You know, that makes perfect sense. In my instance, at least to my knowledge, I have not been cheated on, and I don't even really have a fear of that. Interestingly, for some reason, I'm not particularly paranoid about being cheated on. I have paranoias about, like I said, physical harm mainly, but I think emotional cheating, I probably have paranoias about that, and just the paranoia that people are constantly chattering about me behind my back and just sort of talking about how much they hate me, talking about how much they think I'm just a joke, really. You know, that's what the voices say, at least, you know, that no one takes me seriously, that I'm pathetic, that I'm a joke, that you're unoriginal, just like, you know, all these sorts of things that are, some of them quite arbitrary, but yeah, that's more of where my fear lies. And I suppose there's some basis in that for me. Like I said, I was bullied when I was younger, so it obviously contributes to a lot of my paranoias now that, for whatever reason, seem to be the loudest when I'm in relationships or just close friendships. I hope that makes sense. And yeah, it's a really, really, really difficult thing. Like I said, I think the biggest issue for me is just how you can logically try and interact with that thought. So a huge one for me is the one of feeling like people are conspiring against me. So I'll just use that as an example again. So if I'm having that happen and I might logically say, okay, Scout, that's probably not true. You know, there's no reason, at least that I'm aware of, for them to be conspiring against me. There's no reason for them to be planning to harm me. And I'll try and logically interact with that thought, but it's very, very difficult to talk that thought down, if that makes sense. It sort of just feels like it's, yeah, like it's just, it's very gripping is normally how I describe it. It's very, very gripping, and it's hard when you feel like you are not in control of how those thoughts present themselves and how it affects relationships. I have absolutely walked away from friendships, and I don't know, I'm just trying to think of the right way to word this. I don't know if I regret all of those situations, because I think in a lot of those situations, some people have been genuinely toxic, but I also put my hands up and say that I definitely, absolutely have not always dealt with things well. And I really am mindful of not using mental illness as an excuse, because I think it can be an explanation for some of my behavior. I think it can definitely be an explanation, but I don't want to use it as an excuse, because I've seen people do that a lot. And I don't think it's okay for me to just say, oh, okay, well, you know, I was a bit cold or a bit distant from that person just because I have schizoaffective disorder. No, I don't look at it like that, because I'm obviously aware that this can cause issues. I'm aware of it. The struggle for me is just how gripping it can be. So something my psychologist said to me recently really hit me really, really hard, like a ton of bricks or whatever the saying is. We were talking about friendships and we were talking about self-talk and like negative self-talk. And I'm paraphrasing here. I'm probably not going to say it as well as he said it, obviously. But how did he word it? So we were talking about, yeah, just how I really struggle to trust people, how I really struggle to calmly work through conflict. Conflict is a huge stress. Sorry, I just had to cough, so I had to pause it. Conflict is a huge stress, and I know stress is a huge, huge trigger for a lot of people. I know even the slightest stress for me can, like I said, I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, it can make me just really, really spiral very, very quickly. And it's a frustrating place to be, because it's that, again, it comes back to feeling really gripped and overwhelmed and helpless about how your brain is coping with that stress. So that comes back to conflict, and I really don't deal with it well. And I tend to deal with that by pushing people away to avoid conflict from happening in the first place. Or I've noticed this, and this is again what I was talking about with the psychologist, or to avoid repetitive conflict, I will sometimes just sort of end a friendship, or not even end it, I guess just really distance myself, because it feels like it's going to be causing so much stress in the long term, and that will negatively affect me in the long term. And it also ties into feeling like, you know what, I can't trust this person anyway, so how can I have a friendship with someone who I can't trust them? I hope that makes sense. But so what my psychologist said was, you know, the way that we see ourselves is so important in relation to the way that we have relationships with others. And I know that's not a particularly profound message. He worded it very differently, and just, I suppose, the way that he put that forth was confronting in a positive way, because I hadn't really addressed the fact that my sort of negative self-talk and all that sort of stuff, I hadn't really addressed that properly, and I hadn't looked at just how much my sort of self-anger had been affecting the way that I was pushing people away. You know, it comes down to feeling like, it really comes down to feeling like people are better off without me in their life. And I struggle with that a lot. You know, it really hurts, but I struggle with that a lot. And that's, to be completely honest, I think that's a big reason why why I just avoid certain situations, or sometimes why I might push people away, I guess. Again, I don't like using those things as an excuse, and I don't think it's right to use it as an excuse. It can explain certain things, but you know, other people's feelings matter as well, and I think that's a very important point. I think we have a responsibility to, you know, regardless of our diagnosis, we have a responsibility to do the best that we can. I mean, that goes for everyone, obviously, but there's a reality that it's fucking hard. If you have these thoughts and these voices in your head telling you that someone is doing this and this behind your back or trying to hurt you, it's really hard. And something that I get frustrated with is it's really tiring. So it can make you grumpy. It can make you agitated. I can get very agitated, and I absolutely hate that. It's not a nice thing to feel on edge. It's not a nice thing to feel tired all the time and to feel pissed off easily. You know, that's not a nice thing, and that's something that we have to work on. Just because we have it, and yes, absolutely, it can be a symptom of schizoaffective disorder. Sorry, I need to get a tissue. You know, it can be a symptom of schizoaffective disorder. I mean, that's, you know, that's not contesting that at all. It certainly is a symptom. But if we're aware of it, which a lot of us do have that awareness, then it means we have to be working on it. And yeah, you know, for example, when I've done research on how schizoaffective and schizophrenia can affect people in relationships, relationships tend to be pretty tumultuous if you have a mental illness. And I don't mean that necessarily. I think saying tumultuous almost sounds a bit too negative and sort of like it's constant chaos. I don't think that's true. I think that, gosh, there are so many people who have psychotic mental illness and they're in very happy, very happy, successful relationships, long-term relationships. So I think tumultuous was probably the wrong word. But it's clinically a big symptom for people to have problems with interpersonal relationships, whether that's romantic or friendships. So for, I think it's important for people to be aware of that, and it's important for is important for friends and family to be as supportive as possible, as best as they can. I think, it's a tricky thing. I mean, I'm not going to lie and pretend that I don't sometimes feel immense guilt and like I'm a burden, because I do. I feel like I really want to be able to deal with things better, especially stress. And of course you feel guilt and a heaviness about the fact that you don't always deal with those things well. And like, I'll lose sleep over it sometimes and I'll think about seemingly minor things and just be like, wow, why didn't I do that differently? Even though I know in those moments that I was overcome with paranoia or fear or a sense of threat, you know, which is obviously relating to specific delusions and that sort of thing. It's hard. I think people have to stop assuming that people with psychotic mental illness don't have deep thought about these things. Because I think there's a huge stereotype where people think, oh, if someone has a psychotic mental illness, that they're not self-aware, which is hugely incorrect, you know. Professionals will tell you, obviously there's a clinical scale and there are some people who lack certain awareness of certain things, and that's, I'm not saying that against them whatsoever, it's obviously part of their illness. But yeah, different things affect people in different ways. There's that scale. Some people are really quite aware. Like I'm fairly, as I was talked about in the past, I've had that podcast, I believe, talking about presenting well and appearing well and how there's sort of how it's a double-edged sword in a lot of ways, especially when you have a psychotic mental illness. But yeah, you know, I'm aware that I'm what they would say is clinically, and again, I really don't like this term, and and I know a lot of professionals don't like this term, you know, high functioning. And that's why I prefer the term, you know, well presenting or appearing well. And again, I won't get into that too much because I've already ranted about that in the past, but I even have problems with that because I'm worried about how that can sound degrading to people who are more severe on the clinical scale. And I also don't mean to say that to be demeaning or patronizing to people who are clinically milder on the scale, because A, this illness is episodic in nature. So you could have a day where you are on a severe, the severe end of the scale. And then you can have a day where you're on the moderate side. You can have a day when you're on the milder side. And that doesn't diminish what you're going through whatsoever. Like my doctors have said to me, you know, it's really just relevant for them from a clinical point of view, just to make sure that treatment is working as best as possible, etc. But it's an episodic condition. So you can be going through all these things. You could have a severe mood swing into mania. And then you could also have a severe stressful episode, which triggers voices, or which triggers your delusions that you might not have had for a little while, or maybe they were quieter one day and then they're way louder the next day. So yeah, I'm super mindful of trying to use the right words. But I think people need to understand that those of us with psychotic mental illness, we, you know, so many of us spend so much time feeling guilt for how we cope with our symptoms and thinking, oh, I wish I'd coped with that better. I wish I hadn't gotten stressed and let that delusion really take grip. And I wish I hadn't, you know, pushed that person away because I couldn't trust them, or because my head was telling me to. And yeah, I can't stress just how much sleep I've lost over those sorts of thoughts. It's a lot of, it's a lot of hours that I've just been overwhelmed and fucking frustrated. I don't want to swear on this podcast because I'm trying to keep it professional, but it's frustrating. It is so frustrating when you have those moments of clarity and it's like you're looking at your brain and you're like, brain, get it together. Like, pull yourself together, dude. Just get a grip. Like, you're like lecturing your own brain about it. And I know that these things are happening at a biological level. I get that. I really get it. But it doesn't mean that you can't get frustrated at yourself. It doesn't mean that you can't get disappointed and angry and all these things. And I just want people to understand, maybe you're a friend or a family of someone who has a psychotic mental illness, maybe you have it yourself. A, be gentle on yourself. Do the best you can do. Be forgiving. It's hard, but try and be forgiving. That's important. That's super important. It's so hard to forgive yourself. I personally find it a lot easier to forgive others. Forgiving myself is a really different thing. It's really, really hard because you internalize so much guilt and you just feel like, I don't deserve that forgiveness. It's part of it, you know, it's part of the whole thing. But, you know, yeah, just always remember that these things are happening at a biological level. Not to oversimplify it, but, you know, things are just getting frazzled, you know, chemically speaking, biologically speaking, in your brain. It's not working necessarily in the best way. And I don't mean that to be patronizing or derogatory. I don't mean that to be derogatory. You know, I'm not trying to be derogatory to myself either. But I mean, it's really obvious when I'm under acute stress that my brain isn't dealing with that in the most useful way. You know, instead of being able to deal with that, it just triggers this absolutely intense response where it just like wants to self-destruct. It just wants to, you know, when I had a really, really bad episode last week, and I won't go into too many of the details, I'm just trying to think how much of the details I should go into because I don't want to trigger people, but I'll mention just this briefly, and I will just say there's a trigger warning coming up for self-harm, so please jump ahead about a minute if you don't want to hear about that. I'm not going to go into detail, obviously. But a stressful thing happened. I won't go too far into what the stressful thing was, but a stressful thing happened, and I should have dealt with it a lot better than I did. Didn't deal with it well at all. And I spiraled very, very fast. And the way that I deal with that is I take that anger out on myself because I feel so frustrated that I can't calm down, and feel so frustrated that I feel so helpless as well when I'm hearing these voices in my head, when I'm feeling like someone's about to harm me, when stress triggers those things and they're so, so much worse and it's really intense. It just sort of hits. I don't deal with that well, unfortunately. It was a really bad episode. I'll just say that. And I've had a problem with self-harm and I wasn't happy with how I dealt with it. Let's just say that. And I got in my bed and I just curled up under the blanket and I just couldn't move. I was just, you know, after all the sort of chaotic situation had happened and after I dealt with it in not the best way, and sort of redirected anger at myself. Yeah, I just curled up under the blanket and had to stay there and just sort of felt like I couldn't do anything else. You know, when you're just sort of almost paralyzed by stress and by helplessness and just like I had to just be in this safe feeling where I was just wrapped up in a blanket and where I felt held and where I felt comforted. And it was a pretty bad one. So I do apologize for mentioning something so sort of confronting, but I think that it is probably important to be really honest about the whole picture. I don't really want to, I don't really want to censor too much of what I say. I'll definitely be aware of how some of it is sensitive topics, you know, and I really don't want it to trigger anyone else. That's really important for that not to happen. I guess it's just important to keep in mind that people with psychotic mental illness, on the surface, it may look like we don't have an awareness of what's going on. On the surface, it might look like we're really cold or that we're, not cold temperature, right? Temperature wise, I don't know why I felt like just sort of, you know, emphasizing that. It might look like we're emotionally cold, or it might look like we're being, what's the word, sort of unnecessarily it might look like we're being unnecessarily not combative, but as if we look for conflict. You know, I know that sometimes I'm like, oh gosh, it feels like it's almost like I'm looking for a conflict so that I can make people walk away from me because they're better off without me in their life anyway. And it's like this huge sigh of relief, which I know sounds really, really messed up to some people, but that's how my brain sees it. It says, you're going to be a letdown to them. They think you're all these things. They might hold you in high regard. And the voices will just say, you're not that. You're not this, you know, good person. You're not this, you're not that. It's better for them to just not have you in their life. So give them a reason to just not want to be there. And like I said, I'm so thankful that I have amazing friends who I'm really, really happy that I really don't feel like I look for conflict where there is none in that respect. I have had times when I'm super stressed, especially, I mean, it's just an ongoing thing where, yeah, like I said, you'll see things that aren't really there. You'll hear things that aren't really there. Your brain will tell you that person wants to harm you. They're talking about you behind your back, that sort of thing and that sort of thing. And for the most part, I internalize that and I don't really cause any direct conflict. But there are times where that has happened. And like I said, it's something that we think about a lot and we feel an awful lot of guilt over and a lot of frustration and a lot of, like, we're just as frustrated about it. I think that that's what I want to stress the most is it's so frustrating when you see your brain dealing with something and you don't like the way your brain is dealing with it. And you're like, come on, let's do better to deal with conflict. Let's do better to deal with stress. But it really comes back to the fact that stress is a huge trigger. It just is. It's unfortunately a huge trigger for so many mental illnesses, not just schizoaffective, obviously, but, you know, a lot of illnesses. It's a massive, massive thing. Now, I'm just going to have a little, I should finish up. There's honestly so much that I could talk about with this because I feel like there's, oh, my dog's snoring. Alfie, it's okay, buddy. It's okay. He's having a nightmare in his sleep, poor little thing. Yeah, I was just going to read. I had a nice page up, a good informative page, which was just sort of talking about how people with schizoaffective in particular, how relationships are affected. And yeah, the big point was they're just saying that relationships are obviously very important. You know, we know that social interaction is very, very important. But it's very important as well to make sure that your friends are relaxed people. And I think that's a really good point. You know, I know that I've had people in my life who, and I've done this too, so I'm definitely not saying that that's not relevant for me, but I know I've had people in my life who have been very heavily involved in things like politics or, you know, they'll have very strong opinions and everyone's allowed to have opinions. That's fine. But to the point sometimes where it is very bad for your mental well-being, even just seeing that, or sometimes you'll see people say things in a very sort of heartless way. And perhaps I don't mean it in that way. Again, like I said, I recognize that sometimes things online can come across in the wrong way. And sometimes I interpret things as a threat when they're not a threat. So it's really hard for me sometimes to actually know, like at a base level, what's the truth, if that makes sense. But I think it's fine if you need to distance yourself from certain people who increase your stress levels. And yeah, I think that that's super important. If someone's not mainly a relaxed, down to earth person, or yeah, if they're just causing stress in your life, or if they're just focusing on a lot of negatives in the world, then it's totally fine and understandable to need to keep that distance, because I think those sort of people can make it harder for those of us with psychotic illness to form friendships in the first place, because we start to feel like, oh, is everyone going to just be stressful to interact with? Is everyone like that? And yeah, it's just important to have really grounding people. Now, of course, everyone's human and, you know, I know that, we all have times where we feel like we have to rant or vent about certain things. So I'm certainly not sort of saying that in a sort of judgmental way if you sort of need to rant about stuff, because I need to do that too. You know, like I said, we're all human. But I think it's about the main vibe of a person. You know, is that person giving off a good vibe overall, or are they giving off a bad vibe overall? And that doesn't mean that they're bad people. I think it's just about how you and your brain cope with those things. And it's taken me a long time to realize it's totally okay to just be like, you know what? It just doesn't gel with this person. I can still really care about them and still wish them the best, but it's just not really working. Or, there's so many different sort of reasons why sometimes you might need to distance yourself. But then it's also hard at the same time, because like I said, I recognize that my brain can often see things that aren't really there, and that can cause a conflict when there really was none to begin with. Oh, I hope that makes sense. And I hope that that's sort of giving an example of why it can be so incredibly hard to navigate friendships and relationships, and it's a tiring thing sometimes, and it's important as well, like I've mentioned, to take responsibility for just how we deal with things. And it's a fine line to make sure that you don't internalize guilt that you shouldn't internalize. But it's also important to do the best that we can. For example, you know, I see my therapist, we talk about this stuff, and I say, hey, I really need help with dealing with this and being more trusting of my friends and being able to be there for them and being able to be a good listener. And yeah, things like that. Like, it's a fine line, because I'm very aware of how much guilt I think we take on. And I'm also at the same time very aware of how some people use their mental illness as an excuse. So it is a fine line. For me, it's always come back to, and this is just my personal belief, for me, it's always come back to, if there's an awareness of a behavior, even if that behavior is a symptom, it needs to be challenged to the best that you can. And that's, I want to stress that as well, to the best of your ability. Don't go hard on yourself, because like, this is a biological cause. This is your brain. It's sometimes just like the way I say it is, it sometimes takes you hostage. And but there are ways, there are tools to help us interact with that. For example, there are tools that my therapist gives me to help me interact with delusions and to help me question them and to help me break them down and to help me not get as gripped by them. You know, it's an ongoing process, and it's like a lifelong process, to be honest. But we still have that power. If we have that awareness that something is happening that may not be the best for ourselves and for friendships, etc., relationships, then yeah, we have that power to interact with it. We have the power to try and lessen it at least, and not be quite as gripped by it, not be quite as paranoid. So the main one that I'm working on with my therapist at the moment is just not being so gripped by the thought that everyone wants to physically harm me. So yeah, I hope that that just gives a bit of a picture of how important it is to interact with these things whilst also prioritizing self-care and being gentle with yourself and saying, okay, it's so important to take care of yourself and not hate yourself for your symptoms, because as I've said time and time again, like, of course there's a huge biological reason why this is happening. It's not your fault that this is happening. But I think it's important for us to try and look at the things that we can change and just do the best we can. That's really all that I could say on that. And I wish that I could say that, you know, I'm doing amazing in terms of navigating friendships and relationships. I still struggle with paranoid thoughts every single day. I still feel like people who I care about are talking about me in a negative way. I still feel like they're planning things to harm me, even though I challenge that. And there are some days, though, that it is more controlled. So that to me is a win. And, you know, as well, I've met someone who I really, really care about. She's lovely. And, you know, I'm taking that one day at a time, obviously. And I can get very, very overwhelmed with fear that it won't work out. You know, I've got that fear in my head that, oh, she's, you know, it comes down to that feeling of, oh, she's going to be better off without me. And that sort of thing. I've been honest with her about my mental illness. Maybe I'll make a podcast episode just talking about romantic sides of things and, you know, telling people about your mental illness diagnosis and that sort of thing, because I think that there's interesting discussion potentially in that. But it's so exciting when you meet someone and it feels like the stars align and you really, really get along on a really deep level. And we'll just see what happens. I'm optimistic. She's really, really lovely. I think I've said lovely about 15 times when I'm talking about her. So it's difficult. It's difficult from the standpoint of the paranoia is still definitely there, but we have that opportunity to interact with that and try and minimize that as best as we can, given our own individual situations and circumstances. And, you know, there's so much hope as well for us to have happy, loving, caring, successful relationships and for us not to be feeling like we have to run away because of those paranoias that we're hearing in our head, and to not feel like, to not feel like you'd be a burden. It's nice to, you know, I remember my psychiatrist telling me, you know, that it's not true, that voice that tells you that you wouldn't be a good partner, you know, to know that you would be a good partner, that it's not fair to listen to that voice that's telling you not to even bother, or, you know, that negative, just that sort of overarching, really negative voice that tells you, that person would be better off. That's obviously, I think, very unfair, and it sells people short. And it acts like those of us with psychosis are sort of doomed to be forever alone, which is just not true whatsoever. I know several people with psychotic mental illness who are in very happy relationships, and they work as a team, obviously, which is amazing, you know. But, you know, they work as a team because they understand that it can be difficult some days when you have psychosis. There's no point pretending that's not the case, you know, that you can have some very difficult days, but having a caring and understanding partner who knows what your situation is and who is aware of it and who is compassionate and who's just understanding and just gentle and those sorts of things, I think is so imperative. And I feel really thankful because this lovely, lovely lady who I'm seeing, she's all those things. She's really lovely and kind. And I think I'll finish on that because it is a happy note. I'm so sorry. This was, I've been trying to make these a bit more structured, and it's honestly been harder the more into this whole quarantine we get, just because my mental health has been getting a bit more, it's generally always episodic, obviously, but this stress is just making things a lot more difficult to predict in terms of where I'll be mentally. For example, yesterday I was feeling really quite good. Today I am, this morning in particular, I couldn't get out of bed because my depression was, it was just like that feeling of just nothing, just absolutely nothing would have been happy to just sort of dissipate. And then it's almost, what time is it? It's a bit after midday now. Oh no, it's 1 o'clock. Wow, that went quick. And then that mood came drastically up, and it's just sort of been really, really frantic. And then I'll seem to be having like really a dip in my mood to like a fairly, to the point where I can barely function in the evenings. And it's just, it's tiring the hell out of me because one minute I'll be this way, the next I'll be that way, the next I'll be, yeah, just overcome it. I'm just logically the only explanation I can have for that is just the increase in stress and how that's sort of increasing the whole like background chatter and all that sort of thing in my brain. But I'm sorry that things are a bit not quite as structured with the podcast. I just really want to try and stick to a weekly schedule. So I think I mentioned in the past, there will be some times where I'm unfortunately not as, not quite as with it as I would really like to be. I think today I was okay, I think. But my, like my thoughts or chain of thoughts or whatever can be a bit hard to follow. So I apologize if I have long pauses or if I get distracted or that sort of thing. But yeah, I'll just finish on that positive note. So it feels really nice to meet someone and know that I'm doing everything I can with my therapist to ensure that I don't feel overcome by those paranoid thoughts that have really affected relationships in the past, to make sure that I don't just run away, to make sure that I don't just push someone away. I really don't want to push her away. She's amazing. And that inspires me as well, because I think, you know what, okay, really, really care about her. I really want to do the absolute best job I can to, you know, do my therapy homework, you know, because my psychologist always gives me homework to do. Do my, you know, take it really seriously to combat any sort of negative self-talk, that sort of stuff. You know, it gives me that inspiration to think, you know, I want to be the best that I can be. I want to not let myself repeat those paranoias that have, like, obviously the paranoias are going to be there, but I can change the way I interact with them. And it doesn't mean that those paranoias have to ruin a potentially wonderful relationship. So, yeah, I think I'll finish on that. So thank you so much for listening again. I really, really hope people are taking good care of themselves, eating well, sleeping well, lowering stress as best as possible. It's obviously really hard when we're living in, I mean, I still am pinching myself that this is reality, that we're living through this pandemic, but we're going to get through it. If you're able to, just make sure you check in with your doctors, psychiatrist or psychologist or whomever your support team is. There's lots of great free resources online as well. If you've not heard, just in case, actually, I'll just mention this. I'm just going to Google it just to make sure I'm giving you the right. Yeah. Okay, great. I'm giving you the right details. So I'm aware that, like, I feel very, very lucky to live in a country where I can get therapy. At the moment it is free because our government put out a bill or what have you, which meant that I think it's 10, no, not 10, not quite 10, but we get over a 12-month period, free therapy sessions with a psychologist. They're not usually free, but they made them free during the pandemic because obviously there's going to be a huge need for mental health services, especially for people with acute mental illness. But I'm aware that that's not the case everywhere and that there are some people who, you know, don't have access to that. And it frustrates me a lot that a lot of countries don't have mental health services available. You know, it should obviously be available across the board, but I just thought I'd mention, if you're living in a country where it's really difficult to get therapy, but you really feel like you need to talk to someone, there's a website called Seven Cups. So it's literally just the number seven and then cups, C-U-P-S. And it's a free website for, it's just a free website if you want to go and connect to someone. So it says here, I'll just quickly read this. I've used this actually in the past. I haven't used it for quite a few years, but I did use it a few times in the past. It says, free 24/7 chat, be heard by volunteer listeners. and chat with others who understand. So from what I understand, a lot of the people on this website have mental illness themselves. Not all of them do. They do have some professional therapists, but the free therapy is you've got sort of people who are they're called volunteer listeners, and they actually do have to do like a course on the website to actually be able to be one of those listeners. But I think it's really good. Like if you're unable to, perhaps you might not be able to access a therapist during the pandemic, or I know that in the States, the situations, like I know of so many people who can't get insurance and who can't see a therapist because of that. It frustrates me so much that healthcare over there isn't free and universal. It absolutely should be. We need mental health care services to be super easy and accessible. But yeah, I hope that that might help if anyone really needs someone to chat to. It's there 24/7. And I remember speaking to people in the past and they were honestly really, really good and really nice and just friendly people who were there just to sort of offer support and, you know, be a good listener if you need to just chat to someone. And I guarantee, well, I can't make any promises. I shouldn't sort of give out medical advice, obviously. I'm definitely not a doctor, but I'm fairly confident that you would feel better if you went and chatted to someone if you're feeling overwhelmed. So again, that website's called Seven Cups. I'm not sponsored or anything like that by them. I just thought I'd mention it. Because I feel quite bad talking about therapy, and you know, I feel so lucky to have, like I said, those services available to me, but I do feel quite bad knowing that those services aren't available for everyone, and it frustrates me a lot. So, yeah, I hope that helps, and maybe spread the word as well about that website, just because I think, I'm sure there's others, but that's the only one that I've personally used. Yeah, just so that people know there are options out there. There's obviously a great list of, I'm just going to mention actually, just while we close up, I should have had this up on my screen earlier. I'm so sorry. I'm really unorganized at the moment. I'm just Googling. sorry. Health crisis. Phone lines. Oh, okay. It's only bringing up, there's this wonderful website which has all of the mental health crisis lines in the world. It's this one website which has a really long, and I was just going to mention that website in case anyone, Checkpoint, I think that's what it is. Yeah, I think that's it. Okay, let me just double check. Okay, great. Yes, this is the one I wanted to mention. I'm so sorry that I had to just Google that. I meant to open this earlier. So there's a website called checkpointorg.com. So checkpointorg.com. And it's a website which literally has emergency mental health contact numbers for each country around the world. And it has links to other websites as well. So, okay, yeah, so it lists, all right, just double checking. Yeah, so it links, there's a link to international hotlines as well. So this has a bunch. So I just wanted to mention that because I know I sort of talked about some heavier topics at times. So if you ever need to talk to someone, call those numbers. I've called Lifeline, for example, which is an Australian mental health crisis line. I've called them so many times in the past, probably anywhere from seven to 10 times over the years. And they've always helped. Every single time I've felt noticeably better after the conversation. So don't be afraid. So yeah, checkpointorg.com if you ever need a contact number for a mental health crisis line in your country. That website will have them listed and also has links to other hotlines if you're in, wherever you are in the world. Okay, so I'm, again, so sorry for this being not as organized as I would like. I'm really trying to keep this as professional as possible, but I've just sort of had to accept that the reality of having this illness and trying to do things. Sometimes things just don't always go to plan. So sometimes you just have to work with where you're at and with what you're going through and what's going on in your head. And it's a day-to-day basis, obviously. But thank you. And please take good care of yourself. And I hope whoever you are, wherever you are in the world, that you're staying safe and well. And be kind to yourself, be kind to other people. And take care. Thanks again. Chat soon.